Welcome to the Prosperity Perspective by DML, a conversation about how successful business owners invest their hard-earned money to preserve their wealth and what they might have done differently in hindsight. Thank you for joining us today, guys. Today, we are joined by E.A. Solkovitz, and he has an incredible story about how one of his mentors kind of took him under his wing, helped develop him into the person he is today. And E.A. has gone and really expanded on everything that he's learned into, you know, creating a very successful business as well as giving back to the community. So before we kind of get in, E.A., do you want to give a little bit of a background on yourself for the audience?
I'd be happy to. And I'd like to warn your audience, I never say anything in 10 minutes if I can say it in 20. So they're pre-warned. Basically, I live in Michigan now, but I hail from Chicago, the greater Chicagoland area. And just sort of a couple little snippet stories, if you will, because it had to do with the direction in my life, if you will, and some pretty amazing events at early ages. My father was a milkman, and I'm 65 years old now. So when I was 5 years old, 60 years ago, and you wonder, man, how in the world did that happen? Six decades like flew by. So at 5 years old, I'd help my father on his milk route. He was a delivery man. And he delivered milk, you know, and he'd go in the morning at 3 a.m. and we'd fill up the truck with milk and deliver it to people's homes. And very humble upbringing, you know, my father had one man operation and a delivery man literally with his own truck. And that was the extent of it. There was nothing really unusual about that. But there was a thing that he always said that did stick with me in life. And that was every time we were on the route, he always said this phrase, "Well, when we're done, we're done." And the point he was always making was the sooner we get done with whatever we need to get done, the sooner we can do other things. And, you know, you start to a 5 year old, you know, I mean, the sooner we get the work done, the better, right? Realizing my father didn't punch a time clock. He was a one man operation with his own route, for Twin Oaks Dairy. So that sort of stuck in my mind that, you know, I realized there wasn't anyone looking over his shoulder, telling him what he needed to do every day. And the self-starter concept sort of started to take hold in my life that, you know, if you need to get something done, you know, get off up your assets and go and do it. Right. That helped me, I think, in many times throughout my life, that it was up to me to do it. It wasn't, you know, depending on someone else. And I think with some of your listeners, you know, sometimes we, you know, it's easy to get stuck where we're wondering what should we do next and how should we, you know, and the fear sets in. To be a self-starter is an important aspect of, you know, owning our own business or doing whatever we need to do every single day and not having someone say, be there because you have to. At the ripe old age of 16, Liam, I took my first big step towards success and became a janitor. Now, I didn't mind doing that because business was always picking up. What? Anyway, so here I was at the ripe old age of 16. And I want everyone to know, by the way, that Liam is muted himself. That's why you can't hear him laughing hysterically. And I'm okay, by the way, with people laughing at me and with me. Either one's okay. I'll just go along with it. Right? So anyway.
I was busy writing it down, EA.
Okay, cool. Let's okay, awesome. So here I was at 16 years old, and I had two astonishing events, really, I mean, life-changing events while I was a janitor. The one was I was able to be bonded, which basically means insured. That allowed me to be in expensive places. So if my buffer hit some piece of equipment and it got broke, insurance would pay for it, right? That also allowed me to be in very expensive places, very expensive homes. And one of the homes I cleaned every single Wednesday. I was in her house every single Wednesday cleaning it. The name won't mean anything to you until I make the movie reference. The name of the lady was June Martino. And I don't know if you've ever seen the movie. It's called The Founder. It's about McDonald's and Ray Kroc, and Michael Keaton plays Ray Kroc, right? During the entire movie, Michael Keaton, playing Ray Kroc, talks to a lady outside his office. That lady is June Martino. That's the lady whose house I cleaned every single Wednesday, right? So when I met her at 16 years old, you know, she was already an icon, you know, at that point. And in the Chicagoland area, I lived in the Oak Brook area, which is where the world headquarters for McDonald's was for decades and decades. So I witnessed this whole phenomenon during my entire lifetime. So, and I was astonished by this woman. Here she is. I'm in a million-dollar home cleaning it every Wednesday. I loved cleaning it, by the way, because, you know, I mean, I was thinking, man, people really live this way, you know, and you know, and here I am a janitor and she's got a full-time maid and a butler and I'm there to buff the floors with a special buffing pad and clean the swimming pool. Love the garage. Oh, Liam, I loved cleaning the garage because in order to do that, I had to pull out the Rolls Royce. See, and that, and then I had to, so I'm sitting in a car that's 10 lifetimes income for me, right? And so I pull out her Rolls Royce, and then at night I go home and I drive my Rolls Canardly, which basically is a, you know, rolls down one hill and can hardly make it up the next. So I have my Rolls Canardly that I'm thinking of, and I'm watching this, and I'm looking at this thing, and I'm thinking, you know what? There's really not, I don't see any superpowers. It's not like she's an alien. And being there every single week, and she was super nice, I began to realize the only real difference between her and I is that one, she knew something I didn't know, or two, she was doing something I wasn't doing, or C, which would actually be three. I hate when people do A, B, and three. Anyway, so I corrected myself to three, and that was both of the things. So I realized, you know, here she is. She's a really approachable lady. So I went in one day. It was one Wednesday. She was in extra good mood. I thought, man, this is my chance. I'm going to go talk to June Martino, the icon of the area. Everyone knew who she was. So I got up all the courage of a snot-nosed 16-year-old, shaking in my janitorial boots as I went up to her. I'm going to ask June a question. So I said, hi, June. And she was so approachable, Liam. It was amazing how nice and friendly she was. She said, hi. And, you know, she knew who I was because I was there every week and she always said hi. And I said, can I ask you a question? She said, sure. And I said, could you tell me about it? And she said, well, what? And I said, well, the whole McDonald's thing. I'm not kidding. She put her arm around me, brought me in the kitchen and told me the entire story. And it was interesting because she started the story the same place the movie does, because Ray Kroc was a milkshake mixer salesman. That's how he met the brothers, right? The McDonald's brothers. And so she starts the story there because she worked for him before, you know, McDonald's, before they even knew the name. Well, she was a secretary when he was milkshake mixer salesman. So she tells me the whole story, goes through the whole thing step by step. It was extraordinary. And here I am, 16 years old. I'm thinking, man. And she takes me in the kitchen and she has the maid and butler bringing us food so she can keep telling me the story all day long. And I'm astonished by this. This woman who's this icon is talking to this snot-nosed 16-year-old, right? And telling me the play-by-play. So she gets to one part, which I don't know if you saw the movie, but it's referenced in the movie. And by the way, the movie was very much Hollywood spin. I mean, you know, it's all Hollywood drama. Ray really wasn't the way he was portrayed in the movie. I lived it, the experience in my life. And June really wasn't that way, even though she's portrayed actually pretty nice in the movie. But the events are there. It was based on certain events that certainly did take place. One of the events in the movie is where June keeps the books and she goes to Ray, Michael Keaton, and says, we have no money. We're out of money. And, you know, and that perpetuates a phone call where Ray Kroc calls the brothers. They argue over the phone. I need more percentage. I need more percentage. And he hangs up the phone. That event did happen. Not that way, but it did happen. And she's telling me about it. I mean, this is decades and decades ago, right? And so she said, Ray and I made an agreement that I would work for him for nothing. No money, because there wasn't any anyway. And he would give me worth less than zero company stock. And he would take some of the phone calls from bill collectors if they called me and wanted money. So I just asked her, I said, June, I'm a janitor. I work Friday to Friday, paycheck to paycheck. If I don't get paid on Friday, I'm not showing on Saturday. I need that paycheck. Why did you do it? Liam, I'm not kidding. She sat back in her chair, stared at me and did this eye lock on me. I mean, staring right like through me kind of look. But I could tell she's not home. She just left and I realized I had inadvertently asked her a question no one ever asked her before. Everyone wanted to know what happened with McDonald's, but no one wanted to know why. And I just asked her, why'd you do it? And when she spoke, it made the hair stand up on the back of my neck. I still remember what she said, the way she said it, and my first thought after she said that. When I said, June, why did you do it? Why did you work for nothing? She replied to me and said, because I believed in Ray. And it made the hair stand up on the back of my neck the way she said it. And my first thought, Liam, was, that's it. I need to find me a Ray Kroc. That's the answer. I need to find someone who can put me under their wing like Ray did with her. And it certainly didn't work out too bad for her. I'm cleaning her million-dollar home with full-time maid and butler. You know, and she's paying me to clean. I don't even know what I need to know. I don't know the right questions to ask. I don't even know what I don't know. I need a Ray Kroc. That's it. And that was like this incredible epiphany / revelation. And I'm thinking, wow. And I just threw it out there, Liam. And I just threw it out there and I threw out, where would I find my Ray Kroc? Where would he be? And it wasn't about 3 or 4 months later, same janitorial service. My boss gets a phone call late at night. I was just talking with him. It was just the two of us there. It was after dinner, actually. It was starting to get dark. Phone rings. He picks it up, talks a few minutes, hangs up. So some guy's in from Detroit, and he's doing a build out. He's opening a diamond store, and he wants to see some carpeting for this new build out. I said, okay, what's that got to do with me? He said, I need you to go. I said, I'm not going, Jerry. That was the name of the owner. I said, you know, I'm tired. I've been cleaning all day. There's nothing left. I'm exhausted. And he goes, no, I need you to go, man, to bid out this carpet job. I said, Jerry, you know I don't know how to do an estimate on carpeting. I don't know how to measure it. I said, because the grain has to be right. I don't know how to do any of that stuff. I can vacuum it and shampoo it, but I don't know how to measure it and do a carpet estimate. He goes, I'll just do some measurements and call me over the phone. I said, Jerry, I'm not doing it. He said, I'll tell you what. If you go, I'll give you any pick you want off on Saturday. Now, for a janitor, Liam, that's a big negotiation chip because we're cleaning when businesses are closed. So Saturday, businesses are closed and we're cleaning all day and all night. So I wanted to make sure he wasn't tricking me and I repeated it back. Any Saturday I want off? He said, yeah, any Saturday. So, okay. So I open up the hatchback of my Rolls Canardly. I'm throwing the carpet samples in the back and I'm going, now, setting the stage for your listeners. I don't want to go. I'm tired, physically tired, mentally fatigued. I'm about ready to do something I've never done before with no one there coaching me and teaching me. So I'm out there on my own. I don't want to do that. I have all the reasons not to go there. And in my mind, I'm talking myself out of it. And I'm only going for one reason and one reason only. And that's the free Saturday, right? So little do I know, I'm getting ready to meet my Ray Kroc, the man that will change the trajectory of my life forever, the man that will become my life's mentor, the man that will become the father I never had, even though I had a father, and I became his son that he never had, even though he had a son. And everything is telling me not to go there. And this light, and he offers me a job, and I start working for him. And then at 19 years old, I became 21 of that, chairman of the board of that company at 21. And what I'm about ready to say is not to be braggadocious. I want your listeners to know the power of having a mentor, one who has done it, who can teach you how to do it, and then be what I call have the ability to dumb up. My only superpower was the ability is I could be a sponge. I had the ability to say, you know, I don't know that. Could you teach me? I'd love to learn about that. You know, rather than today where everyone's trying to be so smart and they all got to have their brand and they all got to look so smart and uppity and they got to be, and that is not the way to make it. Not today. It really, you're so much better off saying, you know, I don't know. Could you teach me about that? I'd love to learn. And I was smart enough to dumb up just because I listened to someone who had done it before, who was already a multimillionaire before I met him. And a genius in the puritanical sense, not the IQ baloney, because I don't believe in that. I've met a lot of educated idiots in my life, you know, that have all the knowledge they can spew back at you, but they have no implement. They're not able to implement at all. And that's the difference between education and wisdom. Wisdom is knowing what to do and when to do it. Education is just, you know, you can read that from a book. So this man was a true wise person. And my ability to just listen to him and then apply. Because a cliche that's not accurate is knowledge is power. That's not true. It's never been true. Applied knowledge is power. Having the knowledge means nothing. It's not going to do you or anyone any good. We have to have the ability to execute it and implement it. Because of that, as an honor to my mentor. I became chairman of that diamond company at 21 and became a millionaire at 21. The first year I earned $1 million in 1 year in personal income. That's not business income, personal salary income. After I paid taxes that year, personal taxes, I had $1 million in my pocket from that year's income at 33 years old in 1989. Now, was that me? No. I want to impress upon your listeners the power of having a good qualified mentor and seeking good qualified counselors who are the best in their area, not just ones who say they can do it. But then when you say, well, can I see what you've done? See, there's the magic question. And if they don't have a good answer to that, then you need to move on and find someone who has the right answer. I was blessed to meet a man who had done all of those things. So that impacted me. And one of the things I can share with your listeners, by the way, finish that story off, at the ripe old age of 19, I asked him the one big question. I said, Sam, will you teach me everything? Everything. Don't hold back. His name was Sam Robbins, my mentor. And he said, sure, but I want one thing from you. He said, when the time is right, and you will know that time, I want you to teach as many other people as possible everything that I've taught you. And so at 19 years old, I made a vow, I made an oath, and I made a commitment to my mentor that now is Givers University. And also I had the blessing of, for 2 years, I was able to interview. I had a radio talk show that was live on the air for 2 years. And in 2 years' time, I interviewed over 1,000 millionaires. And what an education. And I was looking for and seeking for these common threads. What are the threads between all these lives and why are they millionaires? And so many people are not. Why? What was different about that? And a couple of great stories and things that I learned as a result of these that I'd like to share with your listeners. Number one, I emphasize the importance, get a mentor if you don't have one. People like Liam could be your mentor as it relates to your finances and funding, because you need to have someone that can help you in your business with funding, especially if you're just starting out. You know, and because most people don't even understand how money works, let alone the opportunities they have for ways to help their business. They don't know how compensation works. And Liam is an excellent mentor opportunity for you. That's why you want to listen to this show and subscribe to it for those reasons. I'm not pitching Liam. I'm saying it's important to have someone that knows about money in your corner if you're going to have your own business, right? And someone that can give you good guidance. So one of the things I learned with all these millionaires, they all of them had a time in their life where everything told them to stop. Their friend said, stop throwing the towel, it's not going to work. Their neighbor said, stop. Their parents said, stop. The economy said, stop. Their finances said, stop. The political arena said, stop. Whatever the reasons, every single one of those millionaires had that story. The time where, the decision time, where everything says stop, and you decide, should I take the next step? And what's interesting, Liam, is that they took the next step. And the words that they used to explain to me the next part was uncannily the same. And these are people didn't even know each other, different backgrounds, different industry, different time periods of the interviews, totally unrelated, and even used the same kind of words. They all said, I took the next step partly out of morbid curiosity to see if there was anything else that could go wrong. Did I miss anything? You know, it's like, you know, I thought I hit everything that could go wrong. I'm curious, is there anything else? Did I miss something, right? And they had this morbid curiosity, they said. But then when they did take the next step, they said it was interesting how things began to almost effortlessly come together on its own. Sometimes they said even in spite of themselves, things started to work out. It was like temporary defeat left their life and said, this guy or gal doesn't know when to quit and throw in the towel. So I'm going to go to someone else's life and screw up their life because this guy or gal doesn't know when to quit. And they all had this time period. And that paralleled, Liam, something that my business mentor taught me. And it was as follows. And it's very important for your listeners, those that have businesses, hear this and hear it clearly. Every adversity, not some, not once in a while, every adversity carries with it the seeds of an equal or greater benefit. And it's up to us as a leader, when we have these adversities in our life, we have to move aside the leaves and find those seeds, because they are there 100% of the time. My business mentor taught me, get rid of the F-bomb, get it out of your life. I said, the F-bomb? He said, yeah, failure. I said, oh, that one. And he said, don't use the word, don't say it, get it out of your vernacular. He said, rechoice it, reframe it, and use and supplant the word failure with the words temporary defeat, because eternal sounds to failure's too eternal sounding. He said, temporary defeat. He said, when you label it just what it is, that's what it is at that point. It's temporary. And he said, you're gonna get tackled 1,000 times in your lifetime. And when you stand up, you're gonna realize it's a first down and you're still in the game. When you use the word failure, you're throwing yourself out of the game. Don't throw yourself out of the game. So he said, every adversity, not some of them, every adversity carries with it the seed of an equal or greater benefit. When we as leaders and business owners have the ability to move aside those leaves, recognize what just happened, and find those seeds, we will find those seeds were exactly and precisely what we needed to get to the next step up. He said, and without those seeds, we wouldn't get there. Now, the next thing I'm going to say is going to bake the noodle of half of your listeners, because they're going to think this guy, EA, is off his rocker. If he lives in Michigan and that's the way they think, I'm never going to Michigan. This guy is nuts. But if you give it pause and think about it, it will begin to ring true. And that is, when we really understand and embrace the value in temporary defeat in our life, and those seeds that are there that we've needed all along that would not be there without the temporary defeat bringing them, we will over time begin to understand, become wise, and now we can embrace and even welcome temporary defeat, because we can get through it faster. It doesn't make us stuck. We don't fall on our face. We find those seeds, we germinate, we help harvest, and we go to the next. And my business partner said, as you can get through those faster and faster, and you recognize you just got a gift of the benefits you've wanted and needed all along, the temporary defeat brought it to you, he said, you'll start running up the stairs of success while other people are walking or are stuck on a stair. And he said, and you will fly by them, because you're no longer coming from a place of fear. You're no longer thinking, what are they going to say about me? Or what's going to happen? None of that exists anymore, because we're not coming from a place of fear. So those are some of the things that my business mentor shared with me, and how important it is to have a mentor, how important it is to have a good, strong, I've already done it group of counselors around you, not the educated idiots. And there's way more than those than there are the ones who've done it. So find those and be selective, and then watch how your business begins to take shape, because they've already done it. They're going to be able to help you get through those times when you get tackled, and you're going to start to be able to welcome them and grow on that as a part of it. So those are some nuggets I wanted to share.
Lots of nuggets in there. Lots of things coming in my mind. Couple specific follow-ups that I would love for you to expound on. The first, so you talked about the situation where you're tired, you don't want to be there, you're only looking for a day off, and the outcome was you got a job, right? So executionally, right? Like, how did that play out, right? So we talked about the importance of finding a mentor. A lot of people might have identified that person or be in the room with that person. How did you take advantage of that opportunity where you're pitching carpet to turn it into a life-changing event where you got a job?
Well, great question. And it was actually him. It wasn't me, but I think it was because of something my mentor taught me. That same man taught me years later, and that was, everyone in life is so concerned about getting the answer. What's the answer to this? And what's the answer? He said, wrong. They live backwards. He says, it's never about the answers. The answers are omnipresent. They're always there. He said, we need to focus on asking the right questions. He said, people go through life asking the wrong question, getting the answer to the wrong question, because our lives are self-fulfilling prophecies. And then when they get the wrong answer, they're surprised they got it. But it's the answer to their question. He said, so ask the right question and focus on asking the right questions. Don't seek the answers. They're there. They'll always be there. ask the right question. So inadvertently, Liam, I threw it out there when I said, where's my Ray Kroc? Where would I meet him? See, when I asked that and I just threw it out there, I didn't say, oh, I'm never going to meet my Ray Kroc. You know, I'm not that lucky. It's never going to happen to me. See, I didn't, those weren't the questions. And those are the things I was saying. So I set myself up, I believe, for that inadvertently. I didn't know I was doing it. I really truthfully stumbled upon it and just did the right thing by an error, I guess. And then when I met Sam, and he's the one that offered the job to me. And I said, no. I said, no. I said, I don't know anything about diamonds. And he said, well, I'll teach you. And I said, no. I said, no, a second time. I said, the only thing I know about diamonds, number one, they're expensive. And number two, some woman's going to ask me for one someday. That's all I know. And he said, and I said, no, a third time, left. And as I was leaving, he hooked me. He was so good. He's the kind of guy that could look at you for 5 or 10 minutes, ask you a few questions, and totally have a person pegged. Know them in and out, right? That kind of guy. A real wise wisdom in that way. What I call human engineering 101. He knew it. So he knew as I was walking out the door, what he was about ready to say was going to get my goat and grind me. He knew it as I was leaving. He said the following. He said, what do you have to lose? You could always go back being a janitor. And I said, oh, no, I'm all set. I can always pick up a mess and I've got job security. People make messes. I can pick it up. I left. I was driving and I was halfway home and it's almost midnight at this point. And it's grinding me. It's great. You know, what do you mean by that? I could always go back. I guess I could always work somewhere, but you know, what do I have to lose? Well, yeah, I got what I'm going to find out what he meant by all of this. So I turned the car around thinking he's going to be gone going back to Detroit already because it's midnight almost. He was still there. And that's when he offered me the job. And for the next 4 months, I literally got in the car at 4 in the morning at Friday night, Saturday morning, drove all the way to Michigan, 301 miles, met him for 6 hours, got back in the car, drove all the way back to Chicago, did that the same day in one day, every single weekend for 4 months in a row. And I never missed a weekend because I wanted what he had. I recognized he had it.
Let me reframe it then, because I think now this is it. It kind of goes to a different part, right? Whereas business owners, as we're looking to expand the team, what did he see in you, right? I'm sure you had a chance to kind of dissect it, right? Like what got his goat that you were the guy that he wanted to make that offer to that differentiated you, you know, from another janitor that wouldn't have been successful. Right. And I have to imagine that Sam is not the type of person who was throwing out job offers in a multitude and hoping one stuck. Right. I'm sure there was something that kind of got his attention. Right. Like, what do you think that was?
It's a great question. And I can share with you that I believe after dissecting it, because I have thought that, you know, why those instances? And I believed both June Martino and Sam Robbins saw a sincerity of genuinely wanting to learn how in my eyes. And it was not that important. In other words, I believe that June knew when I answered that question, I was not asking a question to try to endear myself to the great icon, June Martino. That I think she knew and could feel I wanted to genuinely know what happened. You know, I'd like to learn this, you know. And I think Sam felt that same thing. We talked about 2 hours. So it wasn't a snap judgment on Sam's part. He had watched me and asked me questions and watched me respond to things. And I think he genuinely, you know, was able to note that I had the ability to dumb up and I had a genuine sincerity and desire to make it. Because at 16 years old, I wanted to be rich and happy, not realizing I even had that backwards. First, we should be happy and then we should be rich. And, you know, but at 16 years old, I'm all about the money, you know, so show me the money. And so I think that was really it. I think it was the ability to dumb up and be willing to say in a humble way, it's important for a business owner, you know, the ability to be humble and say, you know, I'd love to learn about that. Could you teach me about that? And watch what you learn. You'll be astonished.
Fascinating. So the last question, which is really the central question of the podcast, but I think, you know, the meat of what we were talking about was more important than getting there. from a financial perspective, right? As money started coming in, right? You've talked about a couple of these key nuggets, right? Getting a mentor, taking the next step, dumbing up, being a sponge, wanting to learn. Once the money started coming in, was there a framework that, you know, you worked with Sam in terms of, you know, does it go back into the company? Does it go to buying the June Martino house and butler and maid? Like, how did you frame that up so that, you know, your continued success was, the foundation was laid?
Well, he showed me a couple of great things. Number one, he showed me how to break down all aspects of the business into a percentage of one unit. In other words, let's say we were selling a widget for sake of dialogue, that every single function of the business was a percentage of one widget. And we looked at one widget, and therefore one of the things that helped us is we were, with any of our businesses, we were never out of budget. Because based on that percentage of that one widget, 5% of the widget represented this, 5% of the widget was this, 10% was that. We were never out of budget with our marketing dollars. We were never out of budget with our overhead, because how many widgets we sold each month always determined, and we were able to forecast with high levels of predictability what our budgetary needs were going to be going forward. So we broke it down. We looked at one widget, one service, one item, whatever that one product thing was. And we said, everything is a percentage of that. And then from that, our budgets will be determined. And as the company grows, or if it even goes back for a year or two for the economy or for some other reason, we were never out of budget and never went out of business because of those instances, right? As a direct result, everything was pliable based on a percentage. The second thing was, on a personal level, I'll even take that question even one step closer to me. He taught me the power of three. And the power of three basically was 30%. He said, of your income, as I was becoming more and more prosperous, he said, of your income, set aside 30% in the following three areas. 10% should go to tithing. He said, with 10% tithing and charity work, he said, when you do that, you are lending yourself to intelligent design, and all the universe is going to work in your favor. So 10% should always go there. He said, 10% self-improvement. He said, there's very few investments you could make than the investment in yourself to improve yourself. So 10% in attending courses, seminars, you know, and then another 10% in investments and savings. So it's 10% for tithing, 10% or charity work, 10% self-improvement, and 10% for growing your business, if you will. And that's for savings and investments and investing going forward. And he said from that, and he said the other 70% should be able to live comfortably on that. And you know, I remember when he first told me, I said, man, because it was, I hadn't been really started making any real serious money yet. And I said, man, I can't afford to set aside 30%. He said, then you really need to start doing this, don't you? He said, because if you can't afford it, then you really need it. And I'll share an interesting side bit that he said to me. I told him I wanted to be a millionaire. And he said, well, first thing you want to do in being a millionaire is you got to get $1 million. He said, oh, thanks. Figured that one out. And he said, but I'll tell you the hardest part. I said, what's that? And then he was real solemn. His face was real, like, you know, looking right at me, looking through me. He had eyes that would pierce your soul. You felt it every time he looked at you. He said, the hardest part won't be making $1 million. The hardest part will be believing that you truly are worth it. And I can share with you, that is absolutely factual. Because when we believe that, then our actions begin to change, and the way we think change. And when we believe what we bring to the table, and when we're investing in ourselves, when we have good counselors like Liam around us, that people don't realize, and I'm just not saying this just to plug you, Liam. I mean it generally, when a business owner has you as a counselor or a mentor, they don't realize their confidence level goes up in direct steps because they know Liam's in their corner, handling their finances, helping them if they need another mortgage or a second mortgage or a bridge loan to help their business expand, or maybe they want to go public and they need a bridge loan. But to have those counselors and good mentors who have done it helps add to that confidence, which helps add to, I'm believing I'm worth $1 million. And then guess what? Surprisingly enough, it's usually right there.
What was your journey like in terms of getting to the point that you are worthy and you are worth it, right? Because I think that's part of what you're articulating, right? Is not chasing the thing, but knowing that the thing is coming because you are who you are and you're worth it, right? Regardless of how much is coming in. That's a whole mental mind shift, right? And it's very counterculture. How'd you get there?
Thank you for asking that. And I can share with you, if you pictured a guy on a football field who every chance he got, he picked up the ball. And the second he picked it up, he had 10 guys of the opposing team doing a dog pile on him. I had those on almost a daily basis. And it seemed like there was no, but I was just trusting. I really, at that point, I was just trusting my mentor. Said, I said, man, I'm getting a crap beat out of me on a daily basis. You know, I'm just things I was learning, and I'm managing at 21. I'm managing people, you know, almost three times my age, and, you know, and all the emotional things and the, you know, learning how to articulate and say the right things and learning how to be humble. So I can share with you, there was a lot more days where I had to stand up and dust myself off. But then I learned through that, that it is true that the kite goes up against the wind, not with it. So as I was willing to be tackled over and over and over again and just, and get up, you know, and just get up again and get up again. That's why he taught me right away, get rid of failure, because he knew I was going to get tackled 10,000 times. The reason he knew it is because it happened to him. That's how we knew. That's how we learn. We don't, it's just not something where someone could just take something and they take a biopsy of my skin and they put it on someone else's skin and all of a sudden you're successful. It doesn't work that way, right? That wisdom is knowing what to do and when to do it. And that supplants education. It will supplant education because now we know. And there's the part. So I got to tell you, and I wouldn't want it of any other way, because from that, I got strong. I learned how to, you know, that things were only going to get me down if I allowed them to. I learned how to rechoice things in my mind. And that, you know, when I saw these temporary defeats in my life, and there were many of them, and some were massive and some were very small, as fortunes went in and out of my life, I have to share with you, I would never have changed one single bit of it, because it all brought me exactly where I'm at. And I can share with your listeners, sort of, I guess, is close to closing, I can share with your listeners two things. Number one, go to our website, go to giversuniversity.com. Giversuniversity.com, sign up for our newsletter. We don't spam people. It's absolutely free. You'll get a confirmation email. Do you want to hear from these people? We're not going to fill it. I don't believe in filling up people's emails. You know, I hate that. You know, you sign up for something and all of a sudden you're getting six emails a day and I'm unsubscribe, right? So they're going to get one email a week from us every Thursday. We call it the Giver's Toolbox, and we give them new relationship tools that they can add into their life and into their business to help them with what we teach at Givers University. It's called giversuniversity.com. So sign up there. You'll get some great free checklists. We're not going to spam you, and there's no cost because we're nurturers. Our name is Givers University. So we help businesses succeed and we help people with their relationships. Just putting a quick second on that, because we really hadn't chatted on that. At Givers University, I share with you, number one, all your listeners, we love everybody. I say emphatically, we love everybody. But we teach people, our primary objective is we teach people how to separate the person we love from their deeds, which we may not love. And we teach people how to look for certain deeds, look at certain things they do. And when you see them, and we identify these things, these deeds with checklists. Here's on the checklist, look at these things. And when you see them doing these things, you may want to discern and bring them closer into your life, because givers bring with them the three W's of wisdom, wealth, and wellness. Or if you see other deeds, you may want to begin respectfully distancing yourself from them, not rude or nasty, respectfully distance yourself, because takers always bring with them the three D's of takers, which is defeatism, disruption, and destruction. And every business owner knows the importance of having a good team of givers and an environment of givers. And we teach business owners and we teach people, what are the things you look for to help you discern What are the deeds you should be watching? We love everybody. And when we say giver, we're not labeling a person, we're labeling the deeds. And we say taker, we're not labeling the person, we're not calling them a taker, we're labeling taker deeds. So we teach people discern so you can build a better relationship and we all can build our own giver community around us. And with business owners, think about the times you stomp out fires. Think about when your stress level goes up. Think about when you've had conversations and at the end of the conversation, you have no more energy left. They drained it all from you. All three of those things, Liam, have one thing attached, a name. There's a person attached to that. We teach people how to identify those things in advance by watching their deeds. And as a result, you can build the right kind of team and community around you. And for business owners, when you can be doing productive things as opposed to stomping out fires that usually are not of your making, can have a huge impact on your quality of life. So go to giversuniversity.com. We'd love to be able to share with you. There's no cost. It's absolutely free. And the last thing, unless you had any more questions, do you have any more questions? Because I have
my last question. I think you're hitting on it, was where can the audience connect back with you? And it sounds like it is Givers University.
Exactly right. Giversuniversity.com. And the last thing I want to share with your listeners, which impacted me decades ago, and I pray that your listeners start to say these three things to themselves, because my business mentor talked me into beginning to say these three things. And I can share with you, they had a profound impact on my life as I said them every day for decades and still do today. And these three things are as follows. I will never give up. I will keep rising up. And I will always overcome.
Almost like that should be a Old Testament passage. Very much how you tackle adversity, right? And iterate quickly. That's amazing. I appreciate all the insights and the tidbits and the stories, EA. For the listeners, I think it's hugely important. There's a lot of people that I chat with, and you can tell in talking with EA that there's a genuine desire to give back and to help others, right? Didn't talk a lot about his personal standing, right? It's all about these things that he's learned on his journey and how to share them. And so I definitely encourage you guys to reach out and, go be a part of his network and his group and, continue to learn from his experience as well. So with that, I appreciate you being on the show today, EA, and look forward to some continued dialogue.
My pleasure.
Thank you for joining us today on The Prosperity Perspective. If you'd like to subscribe to our podcast, please head over to theprosperityperspective.com, where you can hear from other successful business owners on their approach to investments. On our website, you'll be able to learn more about how DML Capital currently helps other business owners, like yourself, diversify their investments and grow their wealth. Take our short quiz to see if you're ready to take the next steps toward your financial success.